I've got people hovering around me all the time, and they're nervous and they're worried. And every time I'm speaking to someone, I've got the facility manager or the director of nursing next to me, critiquing and saying, no, that's not what that person meant. They mean this or they mean that. That doesn't give me an indication of confidence.
Welcome to the Aged Care Executive Podcast, the show that's dedicated to helping aged and community care professionals stay ahead of the industry.
And welcome to another episode of the Aged Care Executive Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Peachy, Executive Director of WNL Mobile Healthcare Services. Now, editing a podcast is not really something I enjoy, but it's necessary. You know, we try to have a natural conversation as possible, so it shouldn't require much editing. But, you know, there's noises in the background like babies crying or phones ringing or background hum of an air conditioner, so I've got to cut that out. When I'm doing that process, one of the things I like to do is to try to find a snippet from the conversation and something that sums up a key message from the interview. I actually found it really hard in this episode because there was, you know, five or six different things that were just standout moments in this interview. Today we have with us Daniel Mitrosidis. Daniel has been employed full-time by the agency as an accreditation assessor. Following his employment, he continued to be contracted by the agency, and now he mainly focuses on helping aged care organisations prepare for accreditation. In today's episode, we cover quite a lot. In particular, we talk about how having a good system in place to capture evidence of doing a good job actually creates further benefits to the care and management of an aged care organisation. On top of this, we chat about the top ways to demonstrate evidence, as well as how to use past accreditation reports to guide future continuous improvement programs, or even using past results themselves as future evidence. We cover what we should be doing now, as well as preparing for visits, and also some of the mistakes that some organisations make in terms of providing great care, but not necessarily demonstrating it. So my stats are telling me there's quite a number of you out there listening to this podcast, hundreds of you, and I can tell there's a lot of repeat listeners as well. Please do me a favour, pop onto iTunes and leave a star rating. Doesn't have to be 5 stars, but it'd be good if it is. If not, that's completely fine, but let me know in the comments section what we can do better to bring you better content. Anyway, without further ado, here's our interview with Daniel Mitrosidis. Daniel, welcome to the Aged Care Executive Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, one of the things that I'm really interested in and we've received listener questions about is accreditation, and not necessarily preparing for next year, but what should facilities be doing to make a successful accreditation visit at the moment? Now, I understand you've got a pretty diverse background in aged care. Just so our listeners have a bit of an insight into your role in all things accreditation, can you give a little bit of a background about you and your background in aged care?
Yeah, certainly. At the moment, I'm a founder and managing partner of Innovation Plus, which is a business management consultancy specializing in aged care, but in particular with all accreditation matters. Prior to that, I was a full-time employee of the Aged Care Standards and Accreditation Agency, obviously known as the agency at the moment, for around about 5 years. That was a wonderful experience and opportunity when the organisation was being invented and the new accreditation standards being implemented. And then for the last 15 or so years, up until last year or so, I've been contracted by the agency to conduct audits on their behalf, whether it be unannounced visits or review audits or accreditation visits. But also at the same time is diversifying within aged care in helping aged care organisations not just meet the accreditation standards, but to make it more sustainable and easy to manage, But then diversifying, as I was saying, in aged care approval round applications and business planning and business development for aged care homes and organisations.
Okay, so I guess in that time, having both been employed by the agency as well as contracting to the agency for support visits, I guess you would have come across some interesting scenarios in your time. Are there any standouts that come to mind regarding organisations that have been doing a good job but just didn't have the evidence to back it up?
Yeah, look, it's a simple question that you've got, but not so simple to answer, because some things come straight to me and I think, yep, I've seen this before, I understand this and I know the positives and the pitfalls. And then there's other times where I'm surprised, where, you know, I haven't seen things and yet it's been in the industry for a long time. I think what needs to happen is the more competent and confident the aged care homes, that's management and the staff, are of the accreditation standards as we know them now and the expected outcomes relevant to their area of work, it's a very confident and defense mechanism the homes have when the agency assessors come out, that they give them the impression they know what they're talking about and they're confident and they're proud of their achievements. And if there's anything that in the meantime that comes unstuck or is untoward, they've got the processes behind them that can be a little bit more mature and robust that can remedy that situation quite quickly and have very much less impact on the accreditation standards being not met or non-compliant.
Okay, so it sounds like then that having good systems in place to capture evidence, you know, can help an organisation more than just passing accreditation. What are some of the other, I guess, key benefits of having a good system in place to capture what an organisation is doing?
Yeah, I think it's a matter of having an ongoing approach to accreditation. Accreditation's a milestone, but gaining momentum towards being a quality organisation, that continues on. It's an ongoing journey. What needs to happen, and you mentioned the word evidence before, is making sure that at any given time there's evidence across the whole aspects of the accreditation framework and associated expected outcomes. We're not saying that you must have, you know, 44 bits of evidence. It may be one bit of evidence that covers, you know, a whole standard or several aspects of expected outcomes. And things change because the clientele changes, the staffing changes, so the complexity of the care needs of the residents changes. So how you actually get evidence is entirely up to yourself. There's not a prescriptive way of doing it. But one thing that hasn't changed, even up until this day, is that the accreditation standards were written in 1999 and they haven't been reviewed. I know there's draft versions, there's versions going through at the moment. And there will be change, certainly with the government inquiries, the independent reviews and the Royal Commission that's coming. However, it's a matter of the homes taking in charge of their own destiny and let the regulatory authorities deal with their issues. And hopefully, you know, when the assessors come out and the agency makes a decision, it's a favourable one and that can give everyone the confidence that excellent care and services are being provided.
So capturing evidence doesn't just show what you're doing, but it also leads to improvement as well.
Yes. And one of the things that you need to really have an emphasis on is a consistent approach to continuous improvement as a system with evidence. So you've got a structure in policies and procedures, and you've got a process in relation to gathering that sort of evidence, the inputs. Now, these inputs produces outputs. And those outputs must have an outcome. Not how many residents' meetings have we had, not how many surveys have we received, not how many questions we have asked of the residents. Here's the responses, and the outcomes are, as a response to the feedback from the residents, we were able to change the menu. We were able to, introduce new activities that were relevant to the residents' current capabilities at the moment and their likings. And we were able to, introduce another 3-hour shift between 4 o'clock in the afternoon to 7 o'clock in the evening to help with diversional therapy for residents with more challenging behaviours. They're your outcomes. How you got to it's entirely up to you.
Perfect. So the evidence shouldn't be about what you're doing, but what's happened as a result of it.
Yeah, we're always doing something. Everyone's doing something. But what are the outcomes?
So on the point of excellent care and services, in your role of not just looking at an organisation from the agency's perspective, when you've been helping organisations to prepare for accreditation, have you found, you know, some good examples of organisations whose care and delivery of services have improved just through the mechanism of trying to provide evidence?
Yes, and I think it's about engagement of all the staff. You can't just leave the whole accreditation process and scenario to one person. There's always a champion at work, but you need a few champions. You know, for example, there's so much emphasis on the clinical staff, and especially the registered nurses, taking control of aspects of the accreditation standards. But in reality, only one standard is clinical. And not every one of those expected outcomes are clinical within that standard.
So without naming names, are there any aged care organisations that you can think of that just by engaging everyone and trying to get better evidence, the care has actually improved? Can you think of any specific stories that jump to mind?
Yeah, sure. There was a home in inner Western Sydney, for example, and this is a few years ago, and there was an influx of migrant workers. So these are carers. And what the home did and what they asked me to help them with was to do a bit of a diagnostic snapshot of the organisational competency. It was a very small organisation with another nursing home on the other side of Sydney. And what they found was they had almost like the United Nations of staff. Staff couldn't understand each other, different cultural backgrounds. And if they were from the same country, they may come from different regions. And one region may have a historical conflict with another, and it was quite hard to manage the staffing. So what actually happened was we did a snapshot as to and a stocktake of all the staff, and we found a large core group of staff from one particular country that were in the nation at around about the same time, all qualified under carers or enrolled nurses, and that allowed for calmness, stability, and pure understanding of roles and responsibilities. And then at that time, we were able to engage with the staff, certainly the other ones that showed a lot more, I suppose, embracing of the accreditation standards, because not everyone likes standards. not everyone likes rules and regulations. But some want to take on that extra challenge, and that was quite easier to implement. And the results was improved medication rounds, improved communication from clinical to non-clinical staff when providing care and services, and better recording of outcomes, which was able to make the job of providing the evidence a lot easier.
Okay, and so that sounds like a great continuous improvement program, not just about showing evidence. What are the top, you know, 3 to 5 things an organisation should be doing to show evidence?
Certainly for the homes that have been through the accreditation process several times, is really taking a snapshot of your past performance. And that gives you some level of indication as to where you went well and where you didn't go so well. And then being open and honest and critical of your capabilities, and then critique the previous reports and the information and the evidence that you had previously on how well you did during an accreditation visit or unannounced visit, and then start planning accordingly based on what you're capable of doing.
Okay, so it's a case of not just looking at things from the perspective of, yep, we passed accreditation, but, you know, are we looking good here or are we just scraping over the line?
Absolutely. And the thing is that it's not so much reading between the lines and trying to second guess the agency and the decision makers, but the responsibility and the onus is on the home and the staff to get it right and convince and influence the decision makers that, again, everything is fine and you move on. But one indication is you have a look at 2 or 3 examples per standard of continuous improvement activities. And it doesn't have to be a huge budget expense or a long-standing project with complexities. if you have two or three examples for each standard, that sort of sets the theme for the rest of the standard, that you'll be able to dumb down and then show examples of not just compliance, but continuous improvement within that. Because currently, as we know it, continuous improvement still underpins the accreditation standards. And if you've got a continuous improvement focus that engages the staff and the stakeholders and the consumers, you're going to be much better served moving forward.
Great. So the first step is looking at past performance. The second step is coming up with some continuous improvement projects, you know, a couple of each standard. What else should an organization should be doing?
Just on past performance, if you have a look at the most recent reports and the recent outcomes or feedback from the agency for your home or your organization, if they have found you to be compliant in a particular expected outcome because X, Y, and Z, and it's quite feasible that it still meets industry standards and it's still current and contemporary practice, if your corporate capability is not just getting over the line but able to meet that or improve it even further, stick with it. And then also go back to the assessor saying, simply, last time you came out here, this is what you saw, this is why we were compliant, and nothing's changed. We are still compliant, and this is why we're compliant. So therefore, that's your past evidence is a good judge of your future evidence as well.
Okay, so in light of the Oakden scandal, now that's an example of an organisation who had previously passed accreditation. How does that situation relate to using past performance as a indicator of future performance?
Well, now you're opening up another scenario. And then the agency, for example, in their decision-making, but we're not talking about something that they took their eye off the ball. Like they said recently in the Senate inquiry, the agency made the decision to keep it at the full 3 years. That meant less frequency of visits, less requirement of reporting. And in the meantime, Oakden kept changing their senior management. So there wasn't any continuity. And in the end of the day, it's embarrassing. The situation was disastrous.
Okay, so it's a situation of where even though they'd passed accreditation in the past, there'd been a lot of organisation and structural changes. So it meant what they'd been doing had changed, not the results in the past
Changed. And I think every aged care home should look at the findings, not the accreditation findings, but the independent review findings, ICAC, which is the Independent Commission Against Corruption, the Senate inquiry, and now the Royal Commission is coming across.
Okay, so by the sounds of things then, if you have good accreditation results in the past, as long as you can demonstrate that you're doing the same thing, may be a good indicator of future success. And if anything has changed within the organisation, it might be worth making comment regarding, yes, we've had a structural change, but here's how this doesn't impact these particular processes.
Yeah, absolutely. And things happen in aged care, especially with staffing changes. You get new staff, you get new managers, you get new key decision makers. They have their own management style, their own processes that they want to instill. I'm not saying that they shouldn't, of course, but at the same time, there isn't one way to meet an accreditation standard or an expected outcome. There's different ways. And all you need to do is make sure that if you're bringing in a new way of doing things, have you reviewed it? Is it going to be more effective and is it going to be more efficient? Otherwise, there's other bigger fish to fry within an aged care home, in tackling problems. When you're changing systems wholeheartedly and not testing against the accreditation standards, you're putting yourself at big risk, given that the timeframes now are changing and the government has said that everything is going to be unannounced. So you never know when the assessors are going to be coming out.
And that's a really good point. If you are making those internal changes to a way of doing things or an approach to care or, I guess, any of the other standards, making sure you're testing those changes against the standards and providing evidence of how those changes are going to impact.
Yeah, absolutely. And you may look at a particular process and, you know, internally it's causing frustration amongst the staff because it's not cost-effective and it's inefficient. However, it's meeting the standards. I would keep that practice going and then start up a sort of like a continuous improvement activity, something that you can put in your plan for continuous improvement to review and then implement new processes and then test it. against the accreditation standards. And if it's made an improvement, not just against the accreditation standards, but to the bottom line of the business and the staff, you know, are speaking positive about it, it's really important to make sure that that happens. And that's part of your continuous improvement approach. And when you're assessing, it's a triangular approach with collaboration of evidence. And I use the three P's, the people, the paper, and the process. So you've got the process and you've got the people that are using it. And they're the ones that residents and their representatives or families and staff also need to show that the initiative or the improvement has had a positive impact or experience. That's part of your evidence as well.
Perfect. And I guess that would help show, I guess, greater engagement amongst the staff as well and pride, especially when speaking with the assessors.
Yeah, absolutely. So if there's ownership and people are involved in the process, then the people that get paid to do the work in that area of work are the best people to judge the performance of the actual service. For example, I've done accreditation visits where I've spoken to the facility manager or director of nursing or the boss at the beginning of the accreditation visit. And when we give our feedback informally and casually throughout the day or at the end, and then the formal exit interview after the accreditation visit, that's the only time I've ever seen the boss, because everyone else knows their role, knows an understanding of their performance under the accreditation standards. And that's what the assessors are there for, to assess against and verify against the accreditation standards, nothing more, nothing less. I've also been involved in accreditation visits where I've got people hovering around me all the time, and they're nervous and they're worried. And every time I'm speaking to someone, I've got the facility manager or the director of nursing next to me critiquing and saying, no, that's not what that person meant. They mean this or they mean that. That doesn't give me an indication of confidence in people's ability to actually not just articulate their area of work, it's their understanding of where it is against the performance.
Okay, so on that point, when you're preparing for an agency visit, is it worthwhile making the assumption that everyday practice and how staff know what they're doing is good enough? Or do you really need to make sure that everyone has a greater awareness of what's happening? Or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, look, if they do have a greater awareness and preparation for an accreditation visit, it can happen at any time. And again, I just need to emphasize this, you can't just leave it to a few people, because if they're wrong, the whole organization is wrong. The whole home is wrong.
So what would you say as some of the things that an organization may not do so well when it comes to showing evidence? I mean, they may be providing the best care or doing the best job when it comes to, you know, the other areas of accreditation, but they're just not demonstrating it.
Again, I think it really comes down to competency and then confidence. If you understand something, you know what, from an accreditation perspective, and that's where I'm using this, you can do one of two things. If you do understand it, you know where to improve it if it needs improving. If you understand it, you know whether you are compliant or not compliant.
Okay, so understanding the each of the accreditation standards and expected outcomes relevant to that area of work.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. If you're working in the laundry in an aged care home, at the moment, under 4.8, there's a particular expected outcome in relation to laundry services. That might have linked to occupational health and safety and infection control and comments and complaints and privacy and dignity and all those sorts of things. But how many times have I gone into a laundry, into an aged care home, and there's lost property, either with name tags or no name tags on the clothes? Now, that means we're paying people to work in the laundry, and then they walk around every day with a clothes horse asking people who belongs to this and who belongs to that. And yet the policy for the home is every aged care resident will have their personal clothing, right, with their identification or name tags on there. So when I speak to laundry personnel and I say, can you tell me something about your work and some sort of link in relation to the accreditation standards or whatever, sometimes I get a perplexed look or a blank look saying, I don't know what you're talking about. And I say, how long have you been working here? 15 years. And that still bemuses me to this day that, you know, if you and I were staying, laundry service is a laundry service. Whether it's a private enterprise, one out on the street, whether it's in a hotel or in an aged care home, if the private enterprise one lost your clothes, that'll be unacceptable. And they'll buy it back. The same thing will happen in a hotel. They've got no idea about bed occupancy, but they know when you do get there, they offer a laundry service, and you can tell them when you want your clothes, whether you want them folded, put in the drawer, or hung up. But in aged care, where they know who their bed occupancy is and the rate, and it's 100% of the residents that they know, how do things get displaced?
Yeah, so it's about making sure that, you know, we've got expected outcomes relevant to the area of work, making sure the staff know what those expected outcomes are.
Yeah. The other scenario is, look, at catering, cleaning and laundry is the most important thing to the resident, more so than a lot of other things that happen. And the highlight of the day is their food. And if we can't get that right, that's the customer experience and the dining that's missing out. And that's your evidence, either pro or against meeting the accreditation standard and that particular expected outcome. You know, you've got staff that have gone through food safety programs. You've got HACCP-style auditing. You've got policies and procedures. You've got coloured chopping boards. You've got cleaning instructions and sterilising instructions. You're meeting policies and procedures based on the recipes. All of a sudden, you put that plate in front of that resident and they push it away saying, I don't like it. This is where I think with the new standards and even the current standards, the aged care homes needs to have a particular focus, because if the consumer or the customer or the resident is happy, there's less issues and less policies and procedures to fret about, because it'll become completely evident that most people are satisfied with the product, the service and the delivery, and therefore, you know, you have less emphasis on paperwork and documentation and more on the process and the experience of providing good care and service. I don't know if that makes sense.
I think that makes complete sense. So if you spend more time doing a good job for the end user, the care recipient, the resident, that in itself is an indication that you're doing a good job.
Yes.
But if you focus on the processes, you may not end up with a good result.
That's right. You know, so you've got, you know, for example, communication strategies between the clinical staff. If a resident has gone into hospital in a short-term stay, or they had a fall as a condition of their health status, and then they provide some documentation to the catering staff saying this person can't have a full meal, they need a vitamized meal, or, you know, something like that. And then, you know, everyone's following the actual documentation trail and everything, but the care and the experience is very different to the actual policy and procedure. Because policies and procedures from a quality management perspective are entirely predictable. But you and I, Michael, are humans and we make mistakes, and we've got different personalities and different characters on how to carry out that policy. Not every staff member has to do the same thing the same way. Even within a regimental service within military, and you would know this as well, is that there are ways of doing things, but you have to make sure that the 12 individuals in that group are conforming, but everyone is still an individual with different experience and different understandings and different characteristics. In the end of the day, you put that in a melting pot or in a funnel, and outside the funnel, through the funnel, the nozzle comes out, the result.
And once you've got your staff to understand their role in accreditation and the expected outcome of their job, what are some of the other mistakes that an organisation may make when it comes to showing evidence?
It's not so much showing the evidence. I think there's a traditionally a lull after accreditation, because there's been so much of a hype of activity, extra training, new things have been implemented or otherwise, and people, quite understandably, get a bit bemused and tired. It's watching after that accreditation visit that the good things that you did put in place, that, you know, you work very hard to actually try and get feedback from the residents and the staff, that they just don't become complacent and let it just drift away.
Gotcha.
And that's one of the most common things that we see after an accreditation visit, that so much emphasis has been done, and then all of a sudden, after accreditation, we just go back to our old ways or not upkeeping it or anything.
That makes complete sense, and I guess that's an indication of, if you're doing a support visit and things are completely different, than what you saw a few weeks earlier in the main visit, that, you know, that may have been a show.
Yeah, and it's looking after your own house. And I'm not putting a, you know, just a huge emphasis just on aged care. Let's say that you and I want to, you know, improve our backyard for our own use and our own activities. We get a new pergola, we get new outdoor furniture, we've got new landscaping and all the rest of it. And during the accreditation visit, it's magnificent. And the residents love it, and they've been looking forward to this for the last 8 or 9 months. All of a sudden, you go back 4 or 5 months later, there's cobwebs around the pergola, there's weeds growing through the pavers, the grass hasn't been mown, and the plants have died. So it's that upkeep.
Any other hints and tips that you'd recommend for an organisation for their experience during the support visit?
The only tips that I give and where I've seen success in is the buy-ins, the engagement of the staff. It's really, really important. The residents don't stay in aged care as long as they used to because of the high care complex needs and the nature of the residents. Therefore, trying to get long-term gains and benefits based on your resident mix is coming a little bit more challenging. So the quick fixes are your best opportunity to show that you've make an improvement to a particular resident, one resident only, or a group of residents, or a cluster of residents, care and lifestyle. And again, I don't have a magic formula to this, but this is what I've seen over the last 18 years. And I work in other industries outside of aged care. The more staff are engaged in the process and have more competency in the accreditation framework or in the area of work, which is relevant to the area of the work that they're in, the better off the home is and the staff.
So training and giving all your staff an awareness of and understanding of the accreditation framework, their role in it, and how to speak to assessors sounds like it's a big win.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at the training schedule when you're assessing and a training calendar or a matrix or attendance records, and, you know, the home will be quite proudly telling you, saying, we have a recruitment and selection process, we have orientation and induction, and this might sound cynical, and we have mandatory training, which is fire safety and other emergencies, manual handling, food safety for the kitchen staff, medication management for the clinical staff, and that's it. And I said, what about anything to do with continuous improvement or the accreditation standards? That might not even be as a topic in the actual training calendar, and certainly not mandatory. And yet, if it's not mandatory, my question is, what funds you? If you don't get accredited, you don't get funding. So why isn't that as a mandatory subject matter? Just a refresher, just as regulatory compliance meets, you know, if you're doing fire safety training once a year. Why? Because legislation might say so. And plus, you want to know that you're working with someone that understands the fire safety, the legislation. Why aren't we doing the same thing for the accreditation standards? And the best thing you could do for your staff is that if they leave and they want to go to another aged care home, it'll be even better for the new employer to know that they've got some level of confidence that this person's done some accreditation training.
And one final question. If you could have a billboard at the next major aged care conference and you could have one message on it about how to show evidence, what would it be?
The billboard would probably have something like about, you know, asking, are we looking good here or are we just scraping over the line? If you're just scraping over the line, you must have some form of evidence that you're just scraping over the line. But if you're looking good here, you must have some form of evidence as well. Then, I mean, I don't know if this answers your question. You need to know how robust and mature that, you know, the evidence process is.
No, I think, you know, are we looking good? Or are we just scraping over the line, is a really good, simple message.
It's not just a billboard. If we were to set up a conference, a roadshow, you and I, and it'll be, you know, guest speakers or otherwise, or a little bit of a forum or a workshop, I think that's the theme, the title. Are we looking good here or are we just scraping over the line?
I love it. So how can our listeners find you if they wanted to make sure that they aren't just scraping over the line and they've got all the evidence to demonstrate that they are doing a good job prior to the next visit? Where would we find you, Daniel?
So I've got a website, Innovation Plus.
I will link to that in the show notes. Thank you very much for your time today, Daniel.
No worries. I hope I've added some value.
Thank you for listening to the Aged Care Executive Podcast. What drives us is knowing that we're providing content to help aged and community care professionals stay ahead of the industry. So please, if you get any value from what we're doing, the biggest reward we could ask is that you share this podcast with your colleagues. Don't forget to hit subscribe, it's free, and also leave us a review. 5 stars hopefully, but if not, that's okay. But please, leave a comment and let us know what we can do better, or if there's any particular topics you'd like to hear about. If you'd like to connect with us or have any questions, you can find us on LinkedIn and Facebook at the Aged Care Executive Podcast.